Well, we got more than 100 questions leading up to the debate, and so we want to try to get a few more of those answered. And also have the opportunity to ask you some questions that really just primarily for you wouldn't work in a debate with the others. So let's just start with John. He writes, and each of the candidates has unique experiences they claim makes them the most qualified to lead the city. He notes your time as deputy mayor, and he asks, what was your number one accomplishment and how did you make it happen?
Oh my gosh. I guess just collaborating. You know, the deputy mayor's job is it's one of those things, you kind of have to be a wizard. You have to know how to assemble the right pieces and the right people to accomplish certain jobs. I tell you, the fire ranking that our fire station has, the police ranking, parks, it was already doing well. But also just projects that I had previously been working on and the progress of those. I was working as deputy mayor, but also as the president of the Redevelopment Commission, working on the Hopewell. That's a big thing that's going to be transformative for our community. I also think diversity and inclusion and accessibility, really leaning into programs that we already have, but going further with a lot of the projects that we have, whether it's the climate change plan that we have, developing a diversity and inclusion plan, an accessibility plan, like really digging into things that our community finds dear. The thing is this team that I became part of, they've been doing it for a while. They've been doing it for 6 years before I came along. Not quite 6 years, but you understand. And so it was really an honor for me to step into that role and help them continue to create community. But it's been the greatest job of my life.
So to follow up on that, Dave also emails in, the deputy mayor role has been different for different mayors. A consultant study recently suggested that Bloomington could benefit from two deputy mayors. So what role would the deputy mayor play in your administration? Beyond loyalty, what specific skill set or knowledge are you looking for in a deputy mayor? And then one more, Cleo wants to know, who will you name as deputy mayor?
Oh my gosh, okay, so first of all, I'm not gonna tell you who I'm gonna name as deputy mayor. You know, it's about assembling the right pieces. I know that I'm a big picture person, right? So I have to find my yin to my yang. I need someone that's detail oriented, that can look at my big picture ideas and say, okay, Don, we need to pare these down a little bit. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a taskmaster that will not only help me keep my staff on point, but also keep me on point. The deputy mayor, the job that I had, all the department heads would report to me, and I think we'll continue that on. Now, we went ahead and created a new position within the office of the mayor. And so that position kind of is very similar to the report that we looked at, where it said that we would need two deputy mayors. We would need so we've actually got a chief of staff that takes on the role that report talked about having, when they talked about having two deputy mayors. One was going to take care of the day-to-day operations of the office of the mayor, and then the other deputy mayor was going to take over. The primary deputy mayor would continue to take the job of the entire administration. And so we kind of have that going on already. So more of that.
Great. Michael asks, what do you say to those who seek change and see you as a continuation of the Hamilton administration?
Wow. You know, me and John are different people. But I think we have to remember the fact that a lot of good has been done. And I'm not willing to throw away all the positive things that the Hamilton administration has done. I just want to build on top of that. I've got my own ideas, but I can only do those ideas because the foundation has already been laid. Like, we have a lot of buildings that we've done, a lot of ideas that we've put forward over the last, and we had to. Things had got had to be adjusted, whether they were our fire trucks or the way we did policing, right? I think this next chapter is more about the heart of our community. I think we have to start thinking about creating place, a sense of place for all. Because I think, and continue on with the progress that we've made with our infrastructure, you know, with more housing and that kind of those kind of opportunities. But I think we really, really got to have to focus on who we are as a community and where we're going to go forward. And that's why I'm here.
Kathy wants to know, what's your vision for the future of the Bloomington Farmers Market? Having multiple markets doesn't have the same community feel. She feels that the city didn't handle all the disruption in a very positive manner previously. Do you see a path to combine the markets in a good way for Bloomington?
I don't think they need to be combined, but I do think they all need to be embraced, and we all need to work together. Sometimes a problem becomes an opportunity, and I've had a chance to visit all the farmers markets that are now out there, and each one has its own character. And each one is a different type of character. They're all Bloomington. They're all creations of Bloomingtonians, right? They just have different feels. So if we can get to a place where there are some collaboration and respect for all, I think we can move forward. We could be this community that people come into regionally to go to all our different farmers markets. So that's kind of what I see. Me and my wife, we like mid-century modern. And so we can go into a community and they've got a map. We'll go into one place, an antique store, and it'll show us all the other antique places that we might be able to go to. So I think we can do the same type of thing for our farmers market.
David asks, can you please explain in the specific detail how you would address the need to expand housing opportunities so residents don't have to leave Bloomington?
Oh my gosh. There we've got to be more creative on the type of housing that we have. There are cottage communities that where several little houses can fit on less than an acre of ground. Right now we can't do that. There are micro condos that we can consider. I know one micro condo that has five units that sits right next to, that's right on the B-line, right next to Hopscotch. Sits right next to that building and no one even notices it. But there's five units that are for purchase and we can do more of those. You know, I don't know if we need to use the term plex, but if you think about it, those micro condos are a type of plex. I think we also need to look at a different type of ownership. So we can look at co-op situations. We can take existing condos, or not condos, but existing apartments that are 30, 40 years old and can have investors convert those into affordable condos. There's all kinds of opportunities there. I had the planning department, utilities, and HAND start mapping out areas within Bloomington that are underutilized. Sometimes you'll see a house on 1.5 acres, but we've got sewer right there. So there's opportunities for more density. If you see what these out-of-town developers are doing, they are taking existing properties, tearing them down, and building much, much bigger places. We don't want to duplicate that, but we can learn from that on a more local level. We can look at how smaller housing opportunities and decide to build more density on those in those housing lots. So don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about putting a evolve size building in your neighborhood, but there are these opportunities to have that same kind of thought process on a different scale. But yeah, and honestly, we're going to still have to look, we're going to have to talk, reevaluate our relationship with the county. Annexation has kind of created this division. And I'm not gonna, there's no one that we should blame. We can't really blame, that's happened, it's passed. But our community still, Bloomington still needs to grow. I think there's opportunities to talk to the county about areas that are not in the, we're not in courts, and kind of look at voluntary annexation in those areas, because we're still going to have to grow. And we've got, we actually have, I talk about Blucher Pool. Somebody else can tell me if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's an underutilized water treatment plant, not water treatment plant, but sewer treatment plant that's designed to go up north past Oliver Winery. So we have an opportunity for more housing with collaboration with the county and the city to get a lot more housing that we desperately need in this community.
All right, this is from Bill. Now, he says there is no published audit information for the
city
since 2017.
That's wrong. So Bill, I think one of my competitors is out there saying that stuff. Look, the last audit was 2020, right? The last audit was 2020, and what people are not saying is that the state is the one who schedules the audits, not the city of Bloomington. So the state has done one in 2020, and I don't know when the state is scheduled to do another audit. So that's not on the city of Bloomington. I know people want to keep hearing that, and either they don't know what they're talking about or they're misleading the community.
Let me ask you this then. What would your position as mayor on transparency and financial transactions for the city be?
Continued clarity. I think with the lack of local media, I mean, you guys are doing a great job, but you understand there's a lot more players out there they're gone. And so it's going to be up to us to make sure that the information we have is sent out in many different forms and more consistent and easier to find. You can find these things right now, but you really need to know what it is that you're looking for to actually put it in and say, this is what I'm looking for. It's got to be easier. I don't know if that's where, we're underutilizing cats. The city pays $440,000 a year to cats, and I think the county pays an additional amount of money. Cats is always looking for programming, We've got to do a better job. I was trying to, as deputy mayor, I've been trying to actually build our communications department. It's for the next stage, because we're going to have to start providing the communications for the city of Bloomington and for the surrounding areas.
Rob wants to know how you would support the fire department. He says firefighters need raises, the police continue to get all the support, but the fire department is forgotten about. What are you willing to do?
You know, the fire department is not forgotten about, but we are at a stage where I do worry. I think we're 23 folks down right now. Their current salary is significantly lower than the police currently. And the trend, if you look at the national trend, they're usually very, very close. And we are getting folks outside of Bloomington taking our people away. And some of them are real close, and some of them are further up north, northern Indiana. So I would definitely look at some negotiations on getting them to a level that is competitive. I don't want to spend more money on trying to get new recruits. I don't want to be 40 people down by the time it's it's we're ready to renegotiate their contract. I think we kind of have to start it early, but I will say this. I need to look at the books. I need to talk to the controller, because when we're looking at these things, we're looking at the impact of the entire budget, and so yes, we I'm interested in talking to them. I want to make it happen, but I want to be fiscally responsible before I guarantee it.
The city has formed 501c3 nonprofit organizations to manage the Trades District, Waldron, Buskirk, and others to move initiatives forward, take some of the burden off of city officials. The administration wanted to use the same mechanism to expand the convention center. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that method?
For which one? The convention center?
No, or for using the 501c3.
You know, the 501c, if you know the background, a lot of those buildings right now that we're talking about are owned by the RDC, the Redevelopment Commission. And it's their job to create redevelopment, to foster growth. It's not their job to hold on to these buildings. And right now, they're holding on to the buildings. They're managing, but they're not really capable of managing the buildings. The RDC is supposed to purchase something and then let it go. Right now, we've got a lot of properties. We've got the Trades District. We've got Hopewell. And you see that I was by there today, and the grass is way too high on Second Street, and that's because right now there's really no one that says, hey, we need to take care of this. The 501c3 is built for that kind of thing, so it has a yin and yang type of group that would take care of things long term. So it's nothing to be fearful of. The split right now, I think they're proposing like a four for the mayor and one for the, I don't know the exact numbers, one for the council. I think maybe that needs to be adjusted. And then as far as the convention center just needs to get done. We've been waiting too long. We've been paying taxes. The folks have been paying taxes. Let's see how the collaboration with the county and the city works. Let's go forward with this, right? Make sure that that everybody's getting their needs met, and we're doing it needs to be a world-class event. Event space. It needs to be flexible. It needs to have the arts, our ideas, our future ideas in regards to arts and cultural and music, and plus our civic. We want to be this progressive school of progressive community, and a place where progressives come and convene and push out ideas to the rest of the world, to the rest of Indiana, and so forth. So it needs to be built for that, and I think if we all agree on that we do need this, then we just need to move forward. I hope I'm not being too long, but the 501c3, I think we can eliminate that when we're talking about the convention center right now.
All right, Ann wants to know, what do you think of the traffic closure on the 500 block of East Kirkwood? The restaurants using the public streets for 6 months of the year, to the possible detriment of other types of businesses?
When I talk to most of the restaurants there, they love it. The community loves it. And maybe even eventually that may be a permanent. I think this is kind of a pilot project to see how that would work. So, the long-term idea is curbless Kirkwood, with most likely street closures all the time. I'm not saying that's going to happen in the next 5 years or 10 years or what have you, but there will be studies. And the public likes this, the students like it, there's other communities that do it, and they do it long-term. We're still going to have to talk and see and talk to the people that it's not working for and see what we can do about their issues. Sometimes there comes a time where property is worth more doing something than what it currently is worth, and there might be a better place for that particular business. God, I hate to say that. I'm sorry, but I think we are headed to a time where Kirkwood could be closed off, and I think if we remember that Bloomington is a multi-generational community, then and we can prepare for that, because that's what I don't want to see. I don't want to see a place where folks who have accessibility issues can't experience the restaurants that they like in the Kirkwood that they've grown up with. So we've got to figure out a way how that all can we all can live together with an a Kirkwood that's either closed off permanently or closed off us on a seasonal basis.
All right, Donald writes in, he has a few low-hanging quality of life issues that he'd like to see the next mayor tackle. So banning app-based scooters and e-bikes, banning off-highway gas engines like leaf blowers, lawnmowers, and then porous parking lot requirements. Do you have stances on those?
So I'm all for porous parking lot requirements. I love that. I love that idea. I really am pushing, when you look at our climate action plan, I am pushing for small gas engines to be eliminated from the city of Bloomington. We're definitely working on that with our own staff, trying to convert small engine appliances or equipment that the parks uses and our public works uses. So yes, I love that idea. The scooters, we have 45,000 students that all of them don't use it, but it's part of our Go Bloomington plan. It's part of creating micro transit abilities and getting cars off the streets. And so I think that will be part of it. I think more training needs to be done. I think we're working with geofencing, and working with getting our partners or the companies that own these scooter companies and e-bikes companies. I think we're getting them to be more responsive. And think about safety more. I think we even have a proposal. I think our next proposal, if we sign it, it's going to require more bikes, a larger percentage of electric bikes than scooters. Not a larger percentage of, but you understand what I'm saying. But I'm actually for that in a safe way. In some communities, it's actually the wheel size the wheels that we have are too small, and when folks hit bumps, it can have that turnover effect. So there's a size requirement in some communities. Like, folks, we're not reinventing the wheel. Other communities had these scooters way before we did, and they've put things, safety requirements in place and laws in place that protect folks.
All right, we're four to go. We'll try to wrap up here. Okay, Michael writes in, what assurances can you offer regarding your ability to prevent your business and real estate interest from inappropriately affecting your actions or influence as mayor?
So I don't know if a lot of people know this, I had to recuse myself from Griffin Realty while I was deputy mayor. The boards and commissions had to sign a resolution saying that they would not do business with Griffin Realty. So for the last 2 years, that was my My relationship with Griffin Realty was in my name only. And so I will continue to do that, and maybe even it will actually be a true blind trust if I become mayor. I will make sure that that I don't have any dealings with Griffin Realty at all. I will not get rid of Griffin Realty. I will not. That's my, I grew up poor. That's my generational wealth. I created a multi-million dollar business with no money. And so I've got a kid, I've got a family. He may have kids. I've built a brand. I want that to continue. I can't get rid of that. That's,
All right, Victoria emails in, some of the nicest neighborhoods in Bloomington evolved within a racist, classist Bloomington. What would you do to diversify these neighborhoods, make it available to more people while preserving the quality?
That's a really good point. Some of the people that are most concerned about the quality of their neighborhood, they're talking about neighborhoods that they already gentrified, that were either working class or African American, with these walkable communities. And no one was concerned when it wasn't their neighborhood. No one was saying, let's preserve it for these folks. Where I'm going with that is that we can keep the character of these neighborhoods, but we have to figure out a way to bring another generation in. And if that includes some density, some extra density on some of the blocks or some of the yards, then I'm all for it, as long as the character is in play. I studied architecture, and I live in one of those. I live in Elm Heights, and I love the feel. But my gosh, I don't know if I think we would be a better community if we had more diversity in these neighborhoods from a socioeconomic standpoint, as well as a racial standpoint. I think it would serve our community better. It would serve us all better. We are this multi-generational community with all these different colors and different types of people, but we're still in silos. We're still all living in parallel lives without mixing it together. And we could be just this amazing community and have amazing neighborhoods if we would allow it to happen. So that's...
All right, Casey wants to know how you would handle the drug crisis without punitive action for those suffering from addiction. Will you plan on any drug decriminalization efforts?
From a policing standpoint, within the city, I think so. That's really a county thing. So no, but do I think we as a policing community need to revise how we meet people? I definitely think we do. I'll do my best. I think that's what I can tell her.
All right, last question. Okay. Nissy emails in, what would you do as mayor to deal with the deer problem?
Oh my gosh, why is this a thing? Why is the deer thing a thing? It's always a thing.
It's always been a thing.
And I'd love to know where she's coming from, whether or not she wants more deer or doesn't want deer, or does she want to preserve the deer? But there's so many. We've already done. There's already been research done on this recently, and tell her I don't know. I don't know. I don't want. I've got a few. There are a few people on council actually, who have gotten Lyme disease. Yeah, and so they're very passionate about hey, we've got too much deer. And I saw six deer in my yard yesterday, and I live in Elm Heights. And I think they're lovely, but eventually, you know, when nature gets that close, things happen. My dog is, you know, they're scared of my dog. I mean, it's just, I think more research needs to be done, but Missy, I think something actually needs to be done besides research. I'm just not sure what that is yet.
Well, we really appreciate you coming in today. Like I said, we had over 100 emails. We appreciate your time and effort from our listeners and viewers. Thank you very much.
Thank you.